You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Well, welcome back. Another interesting week as we bring you into MLB.com Extras, the National League Central Edition. I'm Dave Raymond, and this week we can look forward to, well, the Pirates, the most exciting and interesting also-ran in baseball, a Cardinals team that can't lose. The Cubs are licking their wounds. The Brewers, happy to see Paul Molitor back. And in Cincinnati, well, they're going to host the All-Star game, right? Well, to that and maybe a little bit more, National League Central Edition, MLB.com Extras. Tan, rested, ready, as the Cardinals continue to heat things up. Jen, the most boring team in baseball, the St. Louis Cardinals, 50 wins already. They've won, I don't know what it is, 8 of their last 9, 13 of their last 16. And it is literally like watching a machine. The old joke about Albert Pujols, the machine, no longer a Cardinal, but the Cardinals themselves, they just really feel like a machine, just churning out another win every single day.
Yeah, I mean, you keep kind of waiting for them to slip up, and goodness, at this point, slip up might mean losing two or three in a row. I mean, this is a team that's lost three in a row one time all year, which is pretty incredible. And they don't. You look at, I mean, we're talking right now on June 29th. They've lost one home game this month. That was on June 1st. So this team is not losing at home. It's not losing all that often on the road. Right now they're riding a six-game winning streak. They've had seven winning streaks of at least four games already this year. Five of those have been at least five games, and now two at least six games long. So, yeah, this team is on right now in a historic role. I mean, you look at their ability to get to 50 wins in 74 games. They're the first team to do that since the 05 White Sox, who obviously went on to win the World Series this year. And they're just the 18th team to do that in the last 50 years. So the Cardinals are continuing to win. Again, their home record at 28-7, pretty incredible to this point. And they're beating up on the NL Central. So you look at kind of the gap that they've been able to create between them, the Pirates, and the Cubs. And right now it looks like, unless things really fall apart here in the second half, that nobody's probably going to catch this team.
No, it's hard to imagine. You do kind of wonder what is the number, because there is still so much baseball to be played. But my goodness, this lead is continuing to bulge, and that sweep over the Cubs. You know, there are those moments that just become sort of seminal moments in a season, right? Where everybody understands, okay, here, I see what's happening. And, you know, it could be, it, sometimes it's for both teams, right? And for the Cardinals, I would imagine that was very validating. And for the Cubs, I have to believe, you know, a team that sort of fancies themselves on the periphery, that might have been one of those, you know, punches to the gut that sort of signals to them like, all right, well, you know, next year.
Yeah, it did seem as if this Cubs team left very deflated after the weekend. I mean, you know, they came into Busch Stadium 8.5 games out. You know, still with a lot of baseball to play, they leave 11.5 out, and you just kind of look at the uphill climb that presents. Again, when this is a team in the Cardinals that really has shown no streakiness and very little dip, despite, you know, we've talked about this for weeks, the number of key players who are sidelined. So this team is not only winning, but they're winning without a lot of their big-name players. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you look at this first half coming toward a close in the next couple weeks, the Cardinals do have a pretty big road trip coming up, their next one. They play 4 in Chicago, 4 in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I think if either of those teams want to have a shot at maybe setting themselves up to make a run toward the Cardinals in the second half, it's got to win those series. If the Cardinals go in and continue to roll through Chicago and Pittsburgh, you know, I'm just not sure that either of those teams will have it in them or have enough time to be able to make up that ground. But, you know, the Cubs, you look at the Cubs coming into Busch, I think it was over the last 4 years, 12-32, the Chicago team in St. Louis. You know, and certainly the Cubs haven't had that great of teams the last few years, but, you know, for a rivalry matchup, one in which in the past, you know, the Cubs have always kind of played up to, even if their teams haven't been that good, it's just an overmatch to Busch Stadium. I think we saw some of their inexperience come into play at certain points in this series. And again, they do have to be thinking, what do we have to do to kind of jump over this last hurdle?
Well, yeah, the Cubs certainly, Jen, but the team to me that might just be shaking their heads, the Pirates, I mean, they have gone on a run in the month of June up until very recently. That was, you know, just extraordinarily impressive. And yet, not only, you know, unable to make up any ground, but here they are now, what, 9 games out all of a sudden, you know, so quickly, you know, gets away from them because the Cardinals just don't lose. And I got to say, for the Pirates, I don't know much, you know, how much more anyone could ask of a team like Pittsburgh and the way they played. in the last 30, 60 days, and yet, you know, they just find themselves slowly but surely drifting further and further away as well.
You're right. No, they've lost ground after a sensational month, and, you know, they've got to be thinking, here we go again. You know, the pushes that they made toward the Cardinals in 2013 fell just short. Again, in 2014 fell just short. Now, in those cases, it came down to those last few games in September before things were finalized here. Again, this might be determined well before then, but, you know, at this point, it does look like Pittsburgh might be playing for a wild card spot, despite, you know, having, I believe, the second best record in the National League. So, you know, Ian, you think of it that in that regard, the Cardinals not only have a 9-game lead in the AL Central, they have a 9-game lead for the best record in the National League. So that's another thing that they're trying to wrap up or potentially run away with. So, yeah, I mean, the Cardinals still play the Pirates. I believe they have 4 more series against them the rest of the year. So Pittsburgh's going to have its chances to beat the Cardinals head-to-head. That's where they're going to have to take advantage. At some point, the Cardinals are going to likely drop off this pace there. I mean, they're on pace to win 110 games. I'm not sure I see that happening, again, especially as they play without a lot of key players. So, you know, the Pirates at some point are hopeful that the Cardinals are going to back off, but they are going to have to take advantage of beating them head-to-head. And again, as I mentioned, coming up in a little more than a week, they have 4 games in Pittsburgh against them, and that's an opportunity to start that.
Well, last week we talked to Rick Horton in your stead, and I asked him about, you know, the way the Cardinals have carried themselves over the years has been, you know, they can make up for injuries as well as anybody. The depth in this organization, their ability to draft and develop is just unmatched. And I asked him if this team surprised him in any way or how it stood up to some of the other great teams in recent years that have been able to weather the occasional injury. And he didn't hesitate to say, this team's better. This team just has, there's something about it, the way they, you know, I guess just sort of slough off any of these negatives that come their way and continue to march forward. Do you agree? How does it stand up to some of the recent great Cardinals teams?
Yeah, I mean, they really do just continue to march on. And maybe that's the product of the last few years having to go through this. Maybe not to this extreme. You know, you think back to 2011, this is a team that lost Adam Wainwright in spring training, goes on to win the World Series. Think about 2012, they lose Chris Carpenter. Jason Mott, then, you know, being lost a year later to Tommy John surgery for the year. You know, you think about all the key players of the last few years that this team has lost, and then their ability to keep on winning. So I think right now it's just an expectation that, okay, our ace goes down, we'll find another ace. Our number 3-4 hitters go down, somebody else is going to step up and produce in that spot. And, you know, it's certainly easier said than done, but I think when you do believe that you have the ability, the capability to do that, and you couple that with, you know, the depth of this organization has had and it has right now, they're able to do it. I think it has been a little bit surprising to me in the fact that when coming into this year, I didn't think they had the minor league depth, at least at the high levels that they had the last couple of years. You know, you looked at last year, their ability to bring up a guy like Marco Gonzalez and the year before Michael Wacha, some of these players. I didn't feel like they had that necessarily waiting. You know, with that being said, Tyler Lyons comes up this month, wins a couple games. We've seen Xavier Scruggs and Greg Garcia come up and help the Cardinals to a couple recent wins, with either spot starts or pitch hit opportunities off the bench. So, you know, while they may not have necessarily the prime prospects on their way up as they have in recent years, they're finding guys who are coming up and contributing. And I think that does have a lot to do with the atmosphere, the environment in this clubhouse. And again, just this belief that it doesn't matter what happens, we can still win.
Well, to that end then, Jen, what is the atmosphere in that clubhouse? What is the atmosphere around town? I mean, I think of so many other cities across the country where they would just be, you know, shaking buildings to the ground with excitement over the way the team is playing. And yet, winning is so much an expectation in St. Louis. Is there any buzz that this is something special we're all watching, or is it just, yeah, another good competitive year out of these Cardinals?
It's probably more the latter. I would tell you, you know, inside the Cardinals clubhouse, you know, this is something that Mike Matheny has been very bold in preaching. He joked yesterday that he doesn't get the stat pack in his office because he does not want to see the standings. Now, does he know that they've won 51 games? Yes. Yes, he knows. Does he know kind of where that fits historically? He vaguely does, but that's mostly because reporters have been telling him or asking him questions over the last week or so. But, you know, inside that clubhouse, they continue to try to maintain a day-by-day approach, not looking at what they've been able to do over the first 3 months, not looking at the lead they have in the NL Central, but really trying to focus on just today. And, you know, I think that's served them very well, instead of, you know, potentially looking ahead or getting comfortable with where they are. outside, you know, the organization, I mean, certainly there's excitement here. Obviously, St. Louis is a baseball town. I don't need to tell anybody that. It is interesting, though, because I do think that a lot of fans do still see some concerns with this team, and that may sound silly for a team that's 51-24, but, you know, there are some pitching concerns just in terms of how much Michael Wacha and Carlos Martinez can carry just in terms of an inning load and some of these other injuries and whether it's going to catch up with the Cardinals. So I think the excitement's kind of being couched right now. I think we'll see it start to build if this continues toward the end of the season. And obviously in the postseason, it's just a party here for the month of October. But again, inside the Cardinals clubhouse, they're not looking at the standings. They're not looking at what they've done. They're just focusing on the next game they have.
Yeah, well, it is continuing to be an amazing story, the St. Louis Cardinals, even as much as we expect from them every year. But, Jen, it's got to be fun to cover. We always enjoy catching up. And nothing but podcast love this week for Jen and the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll do it again in a week. Carrie, sometimes we say, you know, it was a long weekend. And sometimes it really is a long weekend. Rain delays, Sunday night baseball, travel out to the East Coast. Are you standing up? Are you sitting down? What do you got left in the tank right now?
I'm sitting down. No, everything's fine. We got the All-Star game coming up, and I think Monday is was an off day for the Cubs, and I think it's probably well deserved. I know some of the guys are going golfing if they're awake. I think they landed in New York from St. Louis after the Monday night game. Time to see the sunrise in New York. So I'm sure a lot of guys are slept in. So we'll go from there. All-Star break's coming up. We can all catch up at that time.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I took a couple of quick days of sleep and then just bang out the remaining months. But, you know, I guess some late tea times today for the boys. But, you know, it was also a long weekend in the figurative sense, I guess. A trip into St. Louis, I know that there's still a lot of season left, and you hate to get hung up on standings, per se. You know, the game's back. You know, you want to focus on what you're doing and how you can get better and what you need to do to continue to win. And I'm sure Joe Maddon has a great handle and of all that sort of stuff. At the same time, that 11.5 games now does kind of loom large, and it's hard not to notice it. What is the general sense or mood around the club after this weekend?
Well, I think perhaps, you know, they were swept over the weekend in St. Louis, and I think what it is a reality check. It just reinforces that this is a young team. The Cubs are young. The Cubs have a lot of inexperience and that they're still trying to find themselves a little bit. They miss guys in the lineup like Jorge Soler, who just started a rehab assignment. Chris Bryant scuffled a little bit. Addison Russell scuffled a little bit. Anthony Rizzo went 1-for-10 in the series. I mean, it's you know, they're young kids, and the Cardinals are a very experienced team, and they happen to be batting about .281 when they're runners on base, and the Cubs are only batting .242, and it's a huge difference. And the Cardinals, good grief, in the Sunday night game, you know, Jason Hamill had a great line. He said it was like guys were just trading places at second base because they kept hitting double after double after double. And it was just, you know, if anybody hit a single or hit something other than a double, it was kind of a shock. So it's a wake-up call. It's good, I think, just so Cubs fans can kind of, you know, sit back and think, okay, these are kids and this is a young team, and they're still developing, and they're still learning, and these are some of the growing pains they're going to have to go through.
And, of course, they're still in a very good position for, you know, the wild card and that kind of thing, and the Pirates, for all that they have done in the month of June, find themselves basically in the Cubs company right now, a pretty solid distance behind the St. Louis Cardinals. So at some point, I feel like teams, or maybe it's a fan base, sort of switches gears a little bit from, all right, let's stop thinking about winning a division per se, and let's start thinking in terms of winning a wild card and getting to the postseason and taking our chances at that point. Not that even those sorts of things need definition at this point, but clearly I think we can all concede that maybe the Cardinals are a superior team in the Central Division.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt of that. But I also think if you would have presented that question to Joe Maddon, he would tell you, no, their focus is still on winning the division, because he's seen how hard it is to get in the to advance in the playoffs when you're the wild card team. And he would prefer that, as far as he's concerned, let's aim high. And so that's his focus. They don't talk wild card. They really don't talk playoffs, to be perfectly honest. They just deal with, okay, what are we going to do to win today's game? And let's go from there. And he warned us in spring training that there would be a long losing streak. They've lost five in a row, which is their longest skid. And it's just a matter of just kind of, you know, take a day off, catch your breath, and then get back at it.
And I guess he pointed out, too, afterward, one of the positives, that they played a lot better defense lately. And I know, you know, again, we talk about building off, you know, little things here and there. That's been a bugaboo.
I think he was saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek, sort of, you know, trying to come up with something positive when he said that in the last week they only made one error. I think he was. If you could have heard the tone in his voice, he was.
Yeah.
It was more like, you know, if your roof caved in, he says, well, you know, the mirror didn't break or something like that. You know, I think it was more that particular tone. So then, uh-huh. Oh boy, we're playing better defense. So.
Okay, I know he's a sunny side up kind of guy. So
yeah.
when I thought, there you go. He found the positive.
He can find silver lining anywhere. So he's that's one thing that's very, very interesting and very good about Joe.
Yeah, and I guess we learned from this too. He can keep a sense of humor in pretty much most situations, which is an awfully, awfully valuable thing to have in these spots. So, you know, looking forward, we throw that inexperienced or the youth label on a club, and we know that comes with expectations of, you know, low moments, you know, troughs. Outside of just inexperience, what would be one of the bigger concerns at this point?
Well, to me, you know, watching John Lester, he hasn't been really the ace guy that, you know, and dominating everything the way I think most fans expected. I'm guessing that if you asked the majority of Cub fans, they would not have anticipated that he would have a losing record at this point. They would have expected him to be 15-0 in his 15 starts. You know, of course, Cub fans are a little demanding, but for him to be 0-3 in June with a 5.74 ERA, I mean that just seems not what anyone, including John Lester, expected. And he's, after his last start, he's admitted that it's been a little tough for him to adjust to the National League. You know, there was against the Dodgers, he gives up four runs early, and then he's pulled after four innings. Well, in the American League, he might have stayed. If he gives up four runs early, he might have stayed in and pitched eight innings. But because they needed a bat, they decided to make a double switch and lift him. And it's just he's still kind of adjusting to that element of it. You know, he's the type of guy where he wants to finish every single start. So that's something that needs some adjusting. Kyle Hendricks has scuffled a little bit too in his outings. Really, Arrieta and Hamill have been the two most consistent guys they've got going right now. And then the fifth starter spot is sort of in flux. They put Tsuyoshi Wada on the disabled list because of some shoulder issues. And now they've got Don Roach was called up from AAA Iowa, made a spot start. And he's actually staying with the team, and he could get another start Saturday. So they're just kind of waiting to see who they need in terms of the bullpen and how they want to proceed that way.
What kind of a personality is Jason Mott for this team, or I guess an influence is he? I know he came out and you had a good piece on him after the series there in St. Louis.
Jason Mott is one of the things, I'll kind of go backwards to answer the question. One of the things the Cubs did that was really smart this offseason is to acquire people like Jason Mott. the Jason Mutz, David Ross, Jason Hamels, Dexter Fowlers. Those guys are guys with experience, and they're really good character people, and they're the type of players that know what it takes to win. And Jason Mott, having played for the Cardinals for as long as he did, knows what it takes. And I guess what I wanted to ask him, Joe Maddon had mentioned that it's been tough for the Cubs to get over, not just the physical part of beating the Cardinals, but that he felt that there was sort of a mental hump. And so I asked Mott, you know, since he played for the Cardinals, what's the secret formula? And he said there isn't one. This is just a team that just doesn't give up, and it doesn't quit, and they just keep going. And the Cubs had the lead in six. They've had the lead in six of the however many games they've played. I lost track now. However many games they've played the Cardinals this year, and they've only got two wins. And if you get a lead against the Cardinals, as Jason pointed out, you need to kind of hold on to it. And that's something that they haven't been able to do. And the Cardinals have this knack of coming back. So, and it's just, Mott's a really interesting guy. I think anyone who is around him for 5 seconds can feel the energy and feel what a good person he is. This is an aside. He and his foundation and John Jay of the Cardinals hosted a fundraiser on Sunday in St. Louis, and they raised a ton of money. They're all working together to fight cancer, to raise money for cancer research, to help out kids that are dealing with cancer. I mean, it's just to know that they put in as much time as they did on Sunday, two guys from two different teams working together for this was really impressive. So not only is he a good pitcher, but he's also a good person. And that's kind of the guys that they need to have more of, not just on the Cubs, but just in baseball in total.
Well, really well said. I'm glad you brought it up because I did read that piece that you wrote, and fans can go check it out too at Cubs.com. It was really pretty neat situation, pretty excellent effort by Jason and company. So,
fans should know that these guys, you know, they do more. Sorry, Joe Maddon always laughs whenever he says do, so they do more off the field. And sometimes it goes unnoticed. You know, Anthony Rizzo is a foundation, John Lester is a foundation, Jason Mott is a foundation, and having the three of them on the Cubs together, and then with Joe Maddon doing his work, it's just nice to know that there's more to their lives than just the baseball.
Indeed. Well, good stuff. And four games for the Cardinals coming up at Wrigley Field here in the very near future as well. So that'll give fans something to really look forward to. In the meantime,
yes.
try and get some rest and
yes.
Enjoy the rest of the roadie.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting. This team has not played terribly. I mean, far from it. It's been an incredible month for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Lately, playing closer to .500 ball the last week and change. Mm-hmm. But it was like 10 days ago, Tom. This team was four games back of the Cardinals, and now they're nine. I mean, I can't fathom what it must feel like in that Pirates clubhouse, and as much as they pay attention to wonder, like, what more do they have to do to really be a player in this division?
Well, obviously, the one thing they'll have to do is take care of the Cardinals themselves when they get to play them in about 10 days, because nobody else is giving them any help, that's for sure. I mean, they do have, even though they've had so-so week, they still had a very solid month of June, and all they're doing is slipping back.
Yeah,
the Cardinals refuse to lose.
I mean, they're 16-9 month of June. 16-9, and they're nine games out. And like you say, they're losing ground. It's just got to be almost maddening for this team.
Well, privately it might be, but as I think we've touched on in the past, they profess not to pay attention to what's going on outside of their own clubhouse. But obviously, the more they're asked about how frustrating and helpless the situation is, you know, the more they have to think about it. And I know the one thing they're pointing to is that last series, four games, just prior to the All-Star break when they do get a first-hand crack at St. Louis. And obviously, they'll have to take at least three out of four, if not a four-game sweep, which is a tall order. You know, Cardinals don't lose four games in a month, it seems like. But that's essentially what it's come down to. They'll have to do that to retain any lively hope of still being a factor in the division race, or they'll have to readjust their sights and not consider the wild card once again as a weak, you know, alternative. Because the other way to emphasize what we're talking about, the fact that they just can't pick up ground on St. Louis, the Pirates have the third best record in the majors, not just in the National League. And as you said, they're not even within shouting distance of St. Louis, but that puts them in a very strong position to once again at least, claim a wild card.
Yeah. I mean, that's good perspective right there. Third best in the majors, and here they are, nine games out. I guess that's one of those things though, where a good life lesson. You have to just take some satisfaction and pride in what you do, and I know they do in Pittsburgh. This team has played awfully well, and they are a very good team. They did shuffle the deck a little bit there on Sunday before the game, and Jose Tabata, one of those guys who was designated for assignment, right, which is interesting. I kind of wonder the future of Jose Tabata.
Well, it may not be because this, incredibly, because this situation doesn't happen often in the major leagues. This is the third time the Pirates have designated him for assignment in less than a year. What that means is that gives Jose the right to decline the assignment and become a free agent. The first two times he accepted the assignments and went back to Indianapolis. And just based on that track record, he may elect to do so again. It just doesn't happen that a team has to designate a player three times. I mean, just to put it in perspective, that's like that piece of gum on your shoe. You can't get rid of. You keep designating the guy, and he doesn't want to leave. which may be a harsh way of looking at it. That the one difference is which made the move surprising, is Jose limited playing time has been a pretty effective ball player. So his profile is a little bit higher this time than the first two times the Pirates designated him, and because of that, depending on what advice he gets from his agent, this time Jose might decline the assignment and try free agency.
It'll be an interesting one to watch with him because at some point you start to take a hint and not feel real good about a situation. But they've managed that relationship pretty well over time. I want to ask you about this home road situation for the team. They're home now for the better part of this first half. Once they get done with these three games at Detroit, a nice long homestand. They have played 10 games better than .500 at home. They're one game under .500 on the road. That's not bad. Most teams are satisfied with a .500 road record. Is there a sense, though, that this is a different team or a dramatically different team, if you will, on the road, and it's something needs to change there? Or are they okay with the way they're playing on the road?
Well, most teams, their target is to play .500 on the road and obviously the better at home. This team is conscious of wanting to do better on the road simply because when Clint Hurdle came aboard, they were an atrocious road team. The second half of even the 2011 season, Hurdle's first season, I think in his whole second half, they won like 8-9 games on the road. So becoming better adept at handling the road and playing as visitors was one of Hurdle's, active projects to improve upon. I mean, he kind of drove that into the players' minds, and that's something that stuck with them. And then actually, even though this, one game below .500, that's even now it's a source of pride because they started off really poorly on the road this season. There's a first series sweep in Cincinnati. Later in April, they got swept in St. Louis. So overall, the record was atrocious on the road. And to get back to almost .500 is a source of pride and obviously something they want to continue to build on. But obviously, that's still, you know, job number one for any baseball team. You hear that all the time. Break even on the road, make hay at home. That's sort of a basic approach to postseason, you know, being a contender. And anything you can do beyond that on the road, obviously, just, you know, improves your chances. And, you know, home or road, you know, the one thing mantra you keep hearing around the Pirates is we just want to win series, you know, win two out of every three games, no matter, you know, where it's being played.
Yeah, well, they have certainly held true to the make hay at home and you know, just get through the road, play 500. They've handled that part of the recipe well. We were talking earlier, though, about that four-game series with the Cardinals right before the All-Star break. Is it, I mean, I know you and I might say, geez, you got to take three out of four, maybe all four, really, if you really want to consider yourself in it in the second half. But don't you think that that's a temptation you really have to resist if you're the Pirates and just simply accept that you need to play well in that series? If you start putting pressure on yourself to sweep a four-game series against St. Louis or even take three out of four, that kind of thing, aren't you kind of setting yourself up for disappointment? Because there is, you know, legitimately, there is a lot of time left in this year.
Yeah, but, you know, let's say the deficit is into double figures by the time they get to those games. It very likely it could be. I mean, it's 9 games now. If you take 4, then it's down to 6, you know, whatever, which is extremely manageable. If you only take 3, you're only shaving 2 games off a possible 10-11 game deficit. That's not enough. Hopefully it's a good precedent. We had a similar situation come up in 2013 because of an early season rainout. They had a 5-game series against St. Louis. The dynamics were pretty much the same. They were far back of St. Louis. As it turned out, they finished relatively down the road. That was the first wild card season. But they went into that 5-game series with the attitude that we have to win every game. And sure enough, they won the first 4. They dropped the 5th. But I do remember they approaching that series, they kind of dropped the one game at a time attitude, and they were looking at the whole big picture and gave themselves the assignment of, you know, taking all 5 games, as incredible as it is in retrospect. And they came darn close to that. And I think they'll take the same kind of aggressive attitude into these 4 games. They're not going to set themselves up for disappointment because, you know, to even confront St. Louis in mid-July with a double-digit deficit, that's a disappointment in itself. So, I mean, at that point, you're only talking about degrees of disappointment. So I think they'll give themselves a high target and shoot for it.
Well, they've remained one of the most fascinating teams to watch. I mean, here they are with the largest divisional deficit of any second-place team by almost a, you know, double anybody else.
Sure.
And yet the second-best record in the National League, third-best record overall. You are covering one of the most interesting teams in baseball, Tom Singer, and we always love to get together and chat about it. Look forward to it next week.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, it's the best also-ran in baseball.
Yeah, Adam, last time we talked, it was sort of, you know, kind of the standard situation. The Brewers had suffered through another really tough week. You know, at home this last week, and of course, you know, a good week, a 4-2 week at home, and maybe we finally stumbled on it. What the Brewers need is a return of Paul Molitor.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Paul Molitor is real happy with his former team, because that's the second series the Brewers have taken from Molitor, and they're obviously trying to, you know, win that division, get back into postseason contention. The Brewers are in a different position by far. So I don't know if the result was what Paul Molitor wanted, but he did talk with great fondness about coming back to the city. He's been back a couple of times in a coaching capacity. But when he left, Dave, I mean, that was contentious. As great a player as he was, there was a lot of hard feelings when he signed as a free agent with the Toronto Blue Jays. Baseball's economics were just changing at that time, and it was this new era that, you know, the Brewers fans, unfortunately, were the ones kind of bearing the brunt of this change, and one of their great players left. And for years, there were hard feelings there. It wasn't really until 1999, the Brewers retired Molitor's number, that, you know, things thawed a little bit. And I think that's a good thing. And Molitor talked with great fondness now, like I said, about the city, about his time with Bud Selig. And the two of them even went to see the new Bud Selig Museum at Miller Park together, and kind of got Mulder got a private showing, and the photos looked like they had a good time there. So it's he's a huge part of the history of that franchise, and it's a very good thing that they've cleaned up whatever hard feelings there were.
No, I agree, and that's one of those things that sort of might take continual nurturing over the years, but I think those relationships with the icons are just too valuable for an organization and for the fan base. It really behooves clubs these days just to make sure that everybody gets it. Everybody's on the same page. Let's get over the things that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago. And let's go back to leaning on the good times and all the positives, especially when you're talking guys like Molitor stature.
Well, and that's happening here in Wisconsin sports with Brett Favre as well, where there's hard feelings there about his departure, and that is still a messy situation in the minds of many fans, and people are kind of slowly coming back around to their love of Brett Favre. They're going to retire his jersey this summer up in Lambeau, and you're right, though. You have to celebrate those great years, and Paul Molitor is one of the players who made that happen. And look, in that Selig experience, there's a video that sort of anchors the presentation there. And Molitor said he got misty-eyed watching it because it's a lot of the great moments from his career. The history of the Brewers is so intertwined with the life of Paul Molitor. And he said it touched him, emotionally.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I mean, and every, I say every, most organizations have gone through this on some level or another with one of their legends, their greats. The Yankees famously have gone through it. So, look, it happens, but it's nice to see a little love back. And like you say, Paul Molitor is just too big a name, too big a symbol of that franchise's history not to be there. I wanted to ask you, though, that homestand, there was the one offensive outburst in the opening game against the Twins. Other than that, there was a shutout. There was a, three-run, two-run, four-run game. Where's the offense at home? I mean, isn't that the whole point of the Milwaukee Brewers and Miller Park is mashing home runs and scoring a lot of runs?
Yeah, that's what they're built for. Doug Melvin is a big believer in ballpark effects, and Miller Park plays for home runs. That's the type of team he's built, and it's been really stunning this season to look particularly at home run numbers at home. The Brewers have surrendered by far the most home runs in baseball in home games. That's not totally surprising, again, because you're playing in a park conducive. If you give up a fly ball, it's a lot of them are home runs. But they're hitting very few home runs at home. They rank in the middle of the pack of home runs in Major League Baseball. And that's really surprising when you talk about a team that has a lot of power hitters. They're not the type of offense that's going to wear down a pitcher with these grinding at-bats. They go up there and hack, and they expect to hit some two- and three-run home runs and win some games that way, and it hasn't happened. I think it's one of the reasons why the Brewers sort of are where they find themselves in the standings. They've missed a lot of power, and many reasons. Ryan Braun's thumb is one of them. Chris Davis, their left fielder, is one of their best slugging players. He's been out with a knee injury. Aramis Ramirez doesn't hit for the same power he did in past years. Jonathan Lucroy missing all those weeks on the disabled list with a broken toe. You kind of look up and down that lineup, and there's reasons why they haven't hit those home runs. And I guess now you get into the summer months, the ball really starts to fly there. And if you're Craig Counsell, you sort of hope that some of that power comes. They're getting a lot of their guys back in the lineup now. Jonathan Lucroy in particular has been pretty productive at the plate. He looks a little bit more like himself with each passing day. Ryan Braun hit a rare home run, a series finale against the Twins. That's a good sign for them. They're just going to need a lot more than that, and they're going to need to stop giving up homers on the other side in order to get things turned around a little bit, because the record at home is also poor. And if you look at the great Brewers teams or the good competitive Brewers teams in recent years, they've gotten a ton of their wins at Miller Park. That's been a huge home field advantage for them. Definitely hasn't been this season.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that has been one of the, I guess, more decisively aberrant numbers for this team. That and, of course, the combined losses for Matt Garza and Kyle Loesch at 19
yeah.
here still a little bit before the All-Star break. That's still, with each passing day, that's hard to believe that it doesn't look like it's going to turn around, and I can't get my brain around
it. Well, the other thing, and we talked about this with Craig Kempsey the other day, is the number of home runs those two have surrendered is stunning. Kyle Loesch, both really are on pace for, by far, their worst seasons in terms of giving up the long ball, worst seasons in ERA. And to have both of them go through it in the same season is really puzzling. They're trying to figure it out. Obviously, they're trying to figure this out. Loesch, in a contract year, should be a great trade piece for this Brewers team. He's not. That's going to have some long-term implications. If he can't put together a couple of good starts and get himself traded here in the next couple of weeks. And even Garza, if he's pitching well, I think he's a guy who the Brewers could look to unload and part with some of that contract that they still have on for the next two seasons beyond this one. But he's pitching so poorly, it's difficult to see another team taking on that investment. So it's killing them on the field, obviously, that they can't get those two guys turned around. It has the potential to kill them off the field now for the future, too, if this hampers what they're trying to do in front of this trade deadline.
All-Star game approaching. Every team will be represented, of course, at the All-Star game. Who's the, who are you nominating? Who are you putting out there for this Brewers team?
Well, you know, Will, again, if I could get a specialist onto the All-Star team, I'd nominate Will Smith. He was there in the talk last year as well. He's a really good pitcher, and I don't know if many people know the name when we're not talking about an actor and singer. But Will Smith is a really good left-handed pitcher, too, and he someday could be an All-Star. But really, the Brewers, their leading candidate by far is Francisco Rodriguez, been a bright spot on this team, perfect in save opportunities. Got a little dicey in a non-save situation against the Twins on Sunday, but as he often does, he makes the one pitch when he needs it, and he gets a strikeout to end the game and keeps his numbers strong. He's really having a fine season, and another guy who is at least worth talking about in these trade rumors. You don't hear too much interest in him, and whether that's because of the contract he's owed, he's owed a $7.5 million, I think it is, next season. There's a financial component there, but also the style he pitches. You wonder if some teams get a little nervous about a guy. You know, he's traditionally not the a guy who goes three up, three down. It's traditionally a little bit interesting with him, but look, this year it's not been that. This year it's been Craig Counsell's word was dominating. It's been three up, three down in many of these outings, and he's doing it at 89-90. He's a changeup pitcher now. He's a pitcher now. Instead, you know, he's not the flamethrower he once was, and Counsell had a great line earlier in the season. He said K-Rod doesn't get enough credit for the way he has reinvented himself in this game. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see if he is a guy who draws some serious interest as we get closer to July 31. There's so much focus right now on power pitching in baseball. K-Rod is not that kind of a guy anymore. And is a team and an owner of another team going to be willing to take a chance on a guy who does it a little different way and give up something of significance? I don't know the answer to that yet. We'll see closer to July 31st.
Well, you know, you're right, though. He is a fascinating story. Thinking about him back in the day coming up with the Angels as that flamethrower and, I mean, teenager, basically, in that World Series. Pretty amazing where he is now and how he's getting by. But, well, maybe that'll be a story told in a couple weeks at the All-Star game in Cincinnati. Until then, Adam, the team is home. Win some baseball games so we can talk about some fun stuff next week.
I will do my best, Dave. Thanks.
Boy, Mark, I mean, another week, and indeed for the Reds, another week. I don't know what else to say. You know, you go to Pittsburgh, and that's a big ballpark, not an easy place necessarily to score runs, especially with the way they pitch. But, you know, Reds average a little better than five runs a game. They take two out of three. You go to New York, again, big ballpark, not a great place to score runs. And they can't, I mean, you had to draw them a map to get them to home plate in that series. I don't know. What do you make of this team? Where do you go with the Cincinnati Reds these days?
I don't know. You would think Pittsburgh was an opportunity, and they really had to play some hard-fought games, especially the last one. They had a rain delay and then played 13 innings and pulled out a win, and they did. They had a lot of hits. They had over 40 hits in the series, and or over the four games, the one game before they played Pittsburgh, and then the three in Pittsburgh, and they averaged five runs a game, like you said, and they could have even had more runs. They left a lot of guys on base in that series too, but they get to New York, and they really did look at basically all squeakers, and only scored a couple runs each game, and it's just tough. And they did run into some really good Mets pitching, though. The young pitching was really dynamite. They had Syndergaard, they had Matt Harvey, and of course they had the new kid, Matt. So that really did a number on them.
Yeah, we talked about last week the two road trips before the All-Star break, and when they had taken two out of three in Pittsburgh, I thought, oh, this is good. You know, Mark and I got to talk about, you know, productive road trip for this team next week. And I felt like if you just take one in that Mets series, largely because of the good pitching that you talk about, if they would have taken one, wow, you know, 500 roadie, you'll take that. No doubt you would take that. But to get swept there, that really just kind of takes any wind or momentum out of the sails.
It does. The one thing I talked to Brian Price about this after the Pittsburgh series was, yeah, the Reds were at the time going into the Mets series about five games out of the wild card. They still were about four games under 500. And I said, more or less, ago, does the team need to have credibility, need to do better on the road? And was the Pittsburgh winning a tough series in Pittsburgh kind of a chance to show that? And can you carry that forward, you know, going forward against the Mets? And he sure pointed that out. Yeah, that he underscored the point. In order to be a team that's taken seriously, you have to not just win on at home games, you have to win on the road. And clearly in New York, it didn't happen, and there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. And then there was the disappointing news, too, about Brandon Phillips, an injury to both hands in that loss on Sunday, which, well, I mean, that's unique, especially happening in two separate occasions. Are these serious setbacks? Will he be out for a while? Is this just stuff he's going to play through? Where are they with Brandon Phillips?
Well, he's not in the lineup today against the Twins for the series opener. It's Monday, so he's not there. The left-hand injury was his thumb, and it was kind of an injury he's been dealing with all week. In Pittsburgh, he also missed a game. One day, he applied a tag on Polanco, who was trying to steal second base, and he jammed his thumb. So he missed one game there, but when he came back for the finale, he looked great, and he had a really nice game on Thursday, and was a big part of the win. And then he got a nice start off to Sunday's second game by hitting a home run, and things seem to be looking up. So we'll see what happens. We're going to be talking to the manager in a little bit, and we'll have an update on his situation.
The homestand. You know, the team does play well at home, six games over 500 there at Great American. And it starts, this homestand anyway, starts with Mike Leake on the mound. And, you know, he's been very good lately in particular. So I suppose they take a little solace in that.
Yeah, they've been very happy with his performances. They've been happy that Johnny Cueto came back. He was pitching Wednesday, and He didn't see, even though he lost the game on Friday, he looked fine. And even though he did make some mistakes, he walked three batters, of course. But Leake's been very strong, and he's always seems to be a no hitter threat. He's had a couple of games where he's at least flirted with it, and he's not afraid to go after hitters and keep the ball down and get ground balls and use his defense, and it's always seemed to work for him.
Yeah, and I always find it more impressive too when guys are able to, you know, string together, you know, good outings, good months, whatever, a good season in the middle of tough situations, right? In the middle of a situation where a team just isn't playing well. Cueto, you come to expect that sort of thing, but Leake, I mean, I feel like in a way, you know, kind of a breakthrough scenario for him, just to continue to plow forward and pitch well, despite a situation around him that just is not very positive.
Well, he broke through. I thought last year he broke the 200 inning mark, and he was a big a strong presence last year in the rotation during a season that didn't go very well overall. Also, there's a lot riding on this year for Leake. Everyone talks about Johnny Cueto being primary trade rumor material. Mike Leake is right there as well. He's a free agent at the end of the season. And one way or the other, he's either going to be going to a team as a free agent at the end of the season, or he might get traded during the season, or, of course, maybe perhaps the Reds can find enough money they could re-sign him. But there's one way or the other, he's going to have to pitch well enough to earn whatever he ends up getting.
Well, we've touched on this before just a little bit, but we're certainly getting to that time of year where it becomes a lot more evident. Are you getting any signals that, the Reds are likely to move guys like Lee Cueto and some others?
Zero. There have been no signals, at least from anything I've heard. It's been pretty quiet, considering the general manager was away from the team for a while, so there wasn't really a whole lot of rumblings. But you definitely see the people that in the clubhouse that would be attractive to other teams, not just the guys that we always talk about, like a Leak or a Cueto or a Aroldis Chapman, but there's also some players like Marlon Byrd, who can certainly help a team. And with his injury and whatnot earlier in the year, he's not going to hit the trigger to automatically have his option vest for next year. That's going to save somebody $8 million or save the Reds that. And that may make him attractive. You know, someone like Manny Parra could be attractive as a left-handed reliever. Jay Bruce, who's got a pretty cost-friendly contract for the next through 2016 with an option for 2017, is like $12 million a year. That's not a lot for a guy that can hit 30 home runs. So there are some players that might be attractive to other teams if the Reds decide they want to sell, which is something they really haven't signaled one way or the other. They're kind of an X-factor team because the ownership really likes what they have as far as some of the players. They've been really against the idea of giving up on the season. And, of course, the All-Star game adds another wrinkle to it. So I think we'll know more after the All-Star game. And, of course, a lot of that depends on where they are in the wild card race.
Speaking of the All-Star game, starting to feel some of the buzz around town about that. I mean, I know sometimes the baseball spirit can be dampened during a tough season, but what's the general mood around town about the All-Star game?
I kind of noticed it for the first time, not for the first time, but I've been away, of course. I was on vacation, and then I went to Pittsburgh and New York, so I hadn't been in town much lately, but I certainly noticed when I got to the airport last night after landing from New York that the All-Star materials are showing up all over the airport. They have big All-Star logos on the floor. They had signs. I saw one of the bridges over to Kentucky had a giant All-Star game sign. They've done up a building, one of the taller buildings in town. It looks they've made it like with a mustache and an old school Mr. Red Legs cap. There's definitely the buzz has started. Definitely, I know people are excited for the week and for the game itself. And you definitely see things ramping up around here at the ballpark. They've done a lot of improvements. They're actually adding a new scoreboard, a second video board over the right field seats to go with the one that's in left field. So there's some things happening in and outside the ballpark and around the city that are definitely All-Star related, and people are up for it today. They had a big vote Reds campaign to get Todd Frazier into the game. There'll be a ballot update, I believe, later today, and they're trying to get him as a starter into the game here in his home park.
Well, he's going to be there in some form or another. There's no question about that, and he has been exciting. I hope he does something big, too. I mean, whether it's the Derby or maybe something in the game, but it just seems like everybody could use that lift, and he's been the guy to provide it this year.
Yeah, he's been an interesting guy. He's got a chance now with Stanton on the DL for a while. He could become the league leader in home runs in the majors, not just the National League. And he's been breaking out little by little each year. Last year he was an All-Star for the first time, and he had a nice year. But this year he's just been really – he's having what, for the Reds at least, what could be a historical year. He's on pace to hit about 53 homers. He could be the first Reds player to ever have 40 doubles and 40 homers in the same season. So there's a lot of different things that he can be shooting for. Of course, he's also an arbitration guy, so he did sign. He is signed through next year, but of course, he'd like to have his. He'll be a free agent in a couple of years, and he wouldn't mind having a big contract. So he's doing really well.
Well, who knows? Next week, maybe we'll have maybe this team will be on a run and be back in the middle of a race again, and the conversation will once again shift as it seems to week by week, Mark. But until then, enjoy the baseball, and we'll talk to you early next week.
Sounds good, Dave. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Another big week in the National League Central. We thank you for listening. MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition.